Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
With ShiftWork, a podcast made in collaboration with RWCF and HRN, we're shifting the conversation about how the restaurant food you love makes its way to the table. Listen to and follow ShiftWork on your favorite podcast app.
Okay, well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a show about all things edible, spreadable, and pourable. And horrible with your hosts, me, Fabio, and
me, Fabia.
We just had a very interesting pre-show. Would you call it a debacle or a kerfuffle about Fabio?
I would call it just like lack of information.
Sure. When nobody knew whether or not Fabio, your favorite supermodel and mine, was alive or deceased. Turns out it's neither.
No, he's alive and loving it.
He's Fabio, alive and loving it, the sequel to Dracula, dead and loving it.
He's only 62. He's young. He looks great. He doesn't even look like he's had any work done, at least in the Wikipedia photo.
Interesting. Is the Wikipedia photo just like a drugstore novel cover?
No, it's a real picture, but it's probably from the 90s. So I don't know what he looks like present day. I'm a little bit nervous that he's gotten some work done, and I don't think he should.
Well, I think he had to have worked on after a seagull smashed into his face on a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah. Did that happen for real?
Yes. It happened for real. A bird died on this man's beautiful face.
But he must have, like, broken a lot of bones because the velocity of the roller coaster and the bird and...
That's what I'm saying. Like, he went onto that roller coaster, a beautiful Fabio, and he left permanently disfigured for the rest of his life. Now he looks like Gilbert Gottfried.
No.
Now he has a bird's face.
They had to transplant the bird's face onto his face and vice versa.
The sequel to Face Off, Bird Face On.
I think it could still be called Face Off because they put faces on in Face Off too. So you don't need to call it Face On.
Bird Face On. Bird Face Off.
Bird,
hello.
Yeah. Bird Face Off is what we called.
Okay, great. I'm glad we got to
the
bottom of
that. Face Off 2, : Bird Face Off.
Fabio, if you're listening, which we know you are, please call into the show and explain to us how it feels to be living with a large beak.
Okay, so check this out. This is crazy. So 62-year-old Fabio... I just checked out his personal life to see if he's married. And he says, in 2021, he retired... And he's hoping to marry and have children.
Wow.
At the age of 61. And he also sleeps in a hyperbaric chamber.
Get the fuck out of here. That's probably because of his new face. He's trying to get it to reverse aging.
So I guess I have to get one of those. How much do they cost, do you think?
I don't know. I have no idea. Probably in the upwards of $3-4 million.
You think they're millions of dollars?
A hyperbolic chamber? Isn't that like what Walt Disney is buried in?
Hyperbaric chamber.
Oh, hyperbaric. Hyperbole. That's much cheaper. It's much cheaper.
A chamber filled with hyperbole would be very expensive.
Right, of course.
Okay, so this one at the Rehab Mart is $38,000.
Okay, that's reasonable. So that's I think you should give up on like trying to think about maybe buying a home or having any savings and just get yourself... a Fabio coffin.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy a home. I'm not going to fall for that scam. So I can just get myself one of these babies.
Exactly. How to get a bird, how to lose a guy in 10 days and get a bird to fly into your face and sleep in a coffin full of amniotic fluid.
That's
the Fabio
not,
story.
You don't know anything about a hyperbaric chamber.
Well, why don't you enlighten me, Nicole, since you're a fucking goddamn genius over here, fucking Bill Nye with all the Fabio info. What's the story? What's a hyperbolic chamber? You're the best chamber in the whole world.
I think that it just gives extra oxygen. I'm pretty sure that Michael Jackson also slept in one of these bad Larrys.
Mm.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's basically, I believe that you have to get in one when you're having trouble breathing, because it's like a medical device initially, right?
Like Bubble Boy, the movie, Jake Gyllenhaal's Oscar-nominated film, Bubble Boy. Was that what he was in?
Yeah, chamber? No. He was in like an actual bubble, kind of like they have in the Outbreak movie to like keep him from getting pathogens.
Of course. That movie, I've mentioned many times on this podcast how much Ebola shook me as a nine-year-old. I was convinced really for decades that I had Ebola. Until COVID happened, it really just took an actual crisis to make me realize I didn't have Ebola. Now, let's get back for a moment to Jake Gyllenhaal, my arch nemesis.
Yeah.
Why was he allowed to just like move past Bubble Boy as though it never happened?
Well, he was a child actor. So technically his parents are to blame.
It was like expunged from his record as though it was like a DUI at age 16. Like nobody ever talks about it anymore. I would like to rewatch Bubble Boy, actually.
I mean, do you ever think about the movies that Sarah Jessica Parker was in when she was a child actor? No. Most of the movies, if you make it to adulthood as a child actor, you get to, like, just pass on with the passage of time.
That's fair. Okay, fair enough. Still, Bubble Boy, he wasn't exactly a child. He was probably, like, 18. But that's fine.
I think that the Bubble Boy is based on a real boy.
I know, but I don't think it's, like, funny, the real story. I think it's, like, very tragic and sad to have to live in a bubble.
But the movie's not funny. It's like a serious made-for-TV movie.
I don't think we're thinking of the same movie. I think Bubble Boy is a comedy. It's supposed to be silly. He's like faffing around in that bubble, rolling from here to there. I don't think it's supposed to be serious. He like rolls down a hill.
I've only seen the made-for-TV serious version of the boy in the bubble.
Right. You're thinking of the Paul Simon song.
Yeah. The only living boy in a bubble.
No, the boy and the bobble and the baby rider to the radio, you know, in the beginning of Graceland. Anyway, let's move on away from this. Jake Gyllenhaal has ruined yet another episode of this podcast.
Well, okay. Did you watch the Super Bowl halftime show?
I didn't. I was working.
I also did not watch it. So I have nothing to offer except for I feel confused about why 50 Cent was upside down or how
he was upside down.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, everyone just kept talking about how he was upside down, but I don't know in what capacity he was upside down. If he
seems
was
like a mistake
on wires, or if he was walking on his hands, or
how interesting.
I don't know. Do you also know that Eminem performed at this?
I do, and of course, I have an opinion like that. I wish that Eminem would stop terrorizing us with surprise performances of "Lose Yourself" that are inappropriately placed. However, I feel comforted by the fact that at least we knew he would be at this event, so we could choose to skip it or tune in or what have you.
I did not know that he was going to be there, but Mary J. Blige was there, and that's pretty
sick.
Cool.
Yeah, that's
cool.
But
also, like, where was Janet Jackson? Is she even allowed to go back on the Super Bowl or what?
No.
We need to, like, forgive her and let her move on with her life.
Yes, forgive her for, like, her breast. Like, okay, first of all, at the Super Bowl, let's go back here to one of the most, like, ridiculous besmirching of like women in pop culture, to the fact that like the women at the Super Bowl who are dancing, like the backup dancers, the fucking cheerleaders, people in the stands, like are wearing basically nothing. The only difference is that a tiny piece of the breast, of which everyone else's whole breast is exposed, like her nipple showed because Justin Timberlake, the world's biggest piece of shit, ripped off her shirt, and we don't like her, and he's fine. He's a bubble boy. He's a bubble boy. Hello?
Hello? You also faded out again. He, try not to have too much strong emotion because it makes your computer freeze, I think. yeah, he, you know, issued like an apology or whatever for that, but whatever. He does suck. But also, Miley Cyrus's tit just fell out like during the Christmas special. And it was
right.
Fine. Everything was fine. I mean, it is a different time now, I guess. But
to
now
be
you
honest,
can have a full-on male penis on Hulu.
I know. Okay, let's talk about this full male penis on Hulu. Nicole, do you want to reveal what we're talking about?
Oh, we're talking about Pam and Tommy, the TV show that was not approved of by Pam or Tommy.
Oh, it wasn't. I didn't know that. Well, it's very, I thought it was very fun to watch. And there is major male frontal nudity. Tommy Lee's penis, played by the brilliant Jason Mantzoukas, actually like looks up and talks to him. It's very funny to see a penis on television. I enjoyed it. How about you?
Oh, I think it's great that we're finally showing male penises on TV. I was just surprised by it.
It was shocking. Although, you know what? I just started watching Euphoria, and there was a bunch of penises in that, too. And I was like, this is a golden age of dicks on television. Look at all the different
ones. Thank God. Because it used to be like you couldn't even, you just, it wasn't a thing. You just like never saw a dick.
I know. And here we are thinking that they're all long and straight and perfect. And as it turns out, not so much.
Yeah, no. But the show itself to me is fine. I'm not getting that into it. I know you really like it, but it's just sort of trucking along for me. They still, I mean, it still hasn't, it's like also airing episode by episode. So I think that if it had come out all at once, I would have just watched all of it.
Right. Like it's definitely a bingeable thing, but I thought it was kind of fun. I don't know. It took me back to that time in the 90s when I was in my early 40s. Just
I do like that
going into my prime.
Is hot now. It's how did that happen?
Who's hot? Seth Rogen? He is hot. It is very annoying. Why does he deserve to be hot?
He doesn't. And that's the problem that I'm having here. But I do like that they make him wear like 90s outfits, like those really long jean shorts that were a thing in the 90s. Yes. And he's just like randomly wearing that to work. And I was like, oh yeah, well, this is a nice nod to the 90s because no other show is doing that. Like no one's doing like throwback 90s costumes or like settings or
yes, it's very unique.
Yeah. So and it's like I'm like, when are we gonna see more 90s stuff, you know? Because I want that I want to feel like I'm represented.
You want to crack open a Snapple and kick back and relax and go back to your youth. I hear you.
Yeah. I just like it's such a great era to mine over and over and over again in any possible way. Because apparently people my age are, like, the money-spending viewing audience nowadays, I guess. Which makes sense. So, like, technically I'm supposed to be, like, married with a disposable income of some sort and, you know, like, a second mortgage or something.
Totally. Enough money to buy yourself a hyperbolic chamber.
Yes. Filled with hyperbole.
You're the best chamber I ever met. I love you, chamber. So anyway, did you do anything sexy for Valentine's Day?
Nope. I spent alone in my apartment, and that's what I wanted to do. But I will say that Jennifer and Bennifer had some Valentine's Day plans that we simply must discuss.
Yes. What did they do?
Okay. Well, I don't know what they did, because this is just her saying maybe they're going to do this stuff, but there's a couple of hilarious things. This is from People magazine. Maybe you've heard of it. So J-Lo has a newsletter apparently, and you know, we need to sign up for it, but, she said that in her newsletter that Ben Affleck for an early Valentine's Day present recorded a video to her music video for the movie Marry Me. So she has a music video out or a music video out for that movie. And apparently, it seems like what Ben Affleck did is, like, do what people do at weddings where they have, like, a slideshow of the bride and groom's, like, baby pictures or whatever. It seems like that's what he did because it said it included pictures of them, like, throughout their relationship even the first time around and then interspersed with her actual music video. So it sounds really terrible.
What? And they were probably all, like, paparazzi photos.
I know.
Wow. There's a hope. Hopefully he included the photo of himself shoving the cardboard cutout of his ex-girlfriend Ana de Armas into the trash.
I hope so. Well, I will remind you that was a servant that was doing that, not himself.
I know, but I like to imagine it was him. It's so much funnier.
And then she said that they're going to go to the Super Bowl.
How romantic.
Yes, very romantic.
I saw a clip of them there. And they were fucking dancing together. And he fucking, like, put his hand out like he was some, like, I don't even know, dude. You have to watch it. I felt sickened watching it. It was yuck.
That sounds great and romantic.
It was very sexy.
She also said that, okay, she wasn't going to share the music video with her fans because it's something that she would only share with her inner circle, okay? And then later she was in an interview and she said that she was going to maybe go to the Super Bowl with Ben and you know, their inner circle. And then Ryan Seacrest was like, who is in your inner circle? And she was like, just the two of us. So
that's a small circle.
Why would you refer to you and your boyfriend as the inner circle?
Maybe she's talking about their buttholes.
Yeah. I mean, I just thought it was really funny because I'm like, J-Lo doesn't know what inner circle means.
Clearly. Wow. Interesting. How fascinating. Yes. That is not, that's not the correct way of using that. It seems like she probably could use some time in a hyperbolic chamber.
And then also she's like, okay, I'm going to share this video with my inner circle, which means she's just going to reshare it with Ben, who gave it to her.
Yeah, that's a very interesting feedback loop. Sounds like you got like, a little codependence
going on. I've seen this. I put all of these pictures in this slideshow.
This is me. I made this on my iPhone with Filmmaker Pro. Do you think he calls her J-Lo or J-Lo?
I think he calls her Bennifer.
Excuse me. Did you just snort?
No, I did not. That was you.
I don't think so. Anyway, nothing sexy for Valentine's Day. Since you asked, I had to work all weekend. So when it came around to old Valentine's Day, I really like, I treated myself. I went into Brooklyn Wine Exchange and they suggested a very lovely bottle of wine for me, which I bought. Then I got a foot massage. Then, bitch, I fucking cooked myself a steak and had shrimp cocktail and a wedge salad.
That sounds beautiful. I just I don't like observe Valentine's Day. I don't want it to be a holiday that exists in my life. You know, like I just, it's a stupid.
I like it.
You like Valentine's Day?
Yeah, I like it. Well, I like it because I always remember having such a fun time at Brucey on Valentine's Day because we obviously always made like a huge party and had a crazy fun theme. And it was such a big day for us. Like instead of just doing like whatever, the regular old, schmegular old, we really made it fun. And I think it's kind of cute.
Yeah, for me, I'm just like, it's really annoying. It's like you can't even like go out to eat anywhere, even at like Pizza Hut, because you have to have you have to like sign up for tickets or whatever and have like a 35 course meal for $300. And it's also just like not fun to go out when those kinds of people are going on. Even working Valentine's Day, which is a great moneymaker day for people in the service industry. But the people who come out are like, we call them like, what do we call it? They're the amateur hour, like people who go out to dinner once per year.
Right.
And
they eat their oysters with a knife and fork.
They sure do. And so I'm just like, I just wish that, I mean, I do understand the month of February is cruel if you don't live in a wonderful climate like California or Florida. And people had to come up with a reason to not commit suicide before spring came, but
or a reason to commit suicide.
Sure. Yeah. If you made it through the holidays as a single person, there's one more slap in the face.
That's exactly what I thought last night. I was like, huh, interesting. This holiday season, because of COVID, I've spent every single holiday and occasion alone. And I think I've done a really good job of like trying to make it nice for myself. And last night I was like eating shrimp cocktail and having steak and I felt very lucky and it was very lovely. But I was also like, huh, isn't this just so bittersweet? Like, so, you know what I mean? Like how, I think this will be the last time I want to do this particular way. And I don't mean just like not being in a relationship.
No,
that's
fine.
Even I mean like literally being alone and not having my friends or family around.
Even if I'm in a relationship, I still don't observe Valentine's Day. It's just not for me.
I do not have any kind of like classical expectation. Like it's Valentine's Day. We need to do something romantic. I just like any occasion to do something fun or cute or whatever, like, or like make a fun meal. I don't know. So to me, I'm in it for that, but I am not like, it's Valentine's Day. Like, where are my roses, Zara? That's what I asked myself since I'm dating myself. I didn't have time to get them yet. I've been busy. That's how I talk to myself in my other voice. It's very high.
That's good. That's good.
It's like Louis Anderson.
Kind of, yeah. A little sharp, a little snappy.
Exactly. My other car is a broom. So anyway, should we get into our topico for today, part two of cake. I know that you guys are probably all been waiting since part one with bated breath.
Yeah, you're like, who cares when the next Pam and Tommy episode comes out? When? When will part two of cake come out?
I don't give a shit about Ben Affleck fucking dancing at the Super Bowl, learning how to Dougie.
Did he learn how?
It doesn't look like it, no.
Well, shame.
Hi, I'm Kiki Luya, the Executive Director of Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Shift Work. In the last 6 months, some 6,500 restaurants have closed their doors, and there's never been a time when restaurants and their 12 million workers have been more vulnerable. It's time to transform hospitality. With Shift Work, a podcast made in collaboration with RWCF and HRN, we're shifting the conversation about how the restaurant food you love makes its way to the table. What does it really take to make that experience happen? And who are the countless workers responsible? We're talking porters, cleaning crew, prep cooks, servers, baristas, hosts, bartenders, barbacks, managers, sommeliers, and chefs. I'll also introduce you to organizations that are leading industry transformation. We'll discuss mental health, fair pay, racial justice, and how hospitality can change for the better. We need it. Listen to and follow Shift Work on your favorite podcast app.
So anyway, folks, without any further ado, we're going to bring you part two of cake, or some might even say part duh of cake. Now, Nicole, what do you feel like you want to learn about cake today?
Today, I want to learn the difference between chiffon, sponge, devil's food, velvet, financier.
Okay, well, I'm not going to be able to do that for you, but let's address something that happened a couple of months ago with a coworker of mine who is an idiot, just kidding, who I love very much, but asked me one day at work what my favorite cake topping was. Now, please bear in mind, this person is British. And he was like, what's your favorite cake topping? And I was like, two grooms? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. What do you mean? What's a cake topping? And then he was like, do you like buttercream or do you like fruit? And I'm like, I don't think this is like the right question. Like, I can understand you saying, what's your favorite kind of cake or what's your favorite type of frosting?
Yes. Both of those questions are better.
A cake topping? So I'm like, I could pick cream cheese frosting or fresh fruit. I'm like, this question, I don't know why, but it just made me so angry. It was so stupid.
And also, fresh fruit on a cake is not for me, everyone. So if you're sending me a cake in the mail, keep that in mind.
Yeah, no fresh fucking, no glazed kiwis for this bitch. But like, here's the thing, like, I hate that question, and that's really all I have to say about it. And he's, like, so sticking to it. You know, a cake topping to me is sprinkles. That's a cake topping.
Love crunchies. A sprinkle.
And even that, why would you add – the whole thing is wrong. Please weigh in, listener. Jake Gyllenhaal, what kind of cake topping did you have when you were inside that bubble? Okay. So, look, folks, I hate to disappoint you, Nicole, but today, instead of all the things you wanted to know about cake, we're going to talk about, that's right, a cake that I, and probably you, will never taste in our lives, wedding cake.
I mean, I've eaten plenty of wedding cake.
That's
always
fair.
A bridesmaid, never a bride.
I've had very little
that's
wedding cake.
That's my motto.
Because, yes. Aside from never probably being married myself, I also have not been invited to very many weddings. And the only weddings I ever really have been invited to were like when I owned Brucey and I was like not able to attend. And then those people didn't understand and we're not friends anymore. So weddings, wedding cake and me, we don't mix.
Well, okay. I've seen you at a wedding before.
I've been to I'm not kidding. I've been to like four weddings and a funeral.
Well, I've been to like 400 weddings, but all the people that could possibly get married in my life are done getting married. Well, most of them anyway.
Second weddings, maybe.
Hopefully, yes. Second weddings would be nice. Although I don't know if it's a second wedding if they like invite you to travel a long distance. If they're just like, you know what? You came to the first one. You don't really have to travel to my wedding.
Right.
I'm 60 years old.
Well, I can't imagine being invited to any more weddings, maybe one or two. But I would like to suggest people out there, as we round this type of time in your lives, middle-aged 40-year-old listeners, consider a divorce party, because you really need it more at the divorce than you do at the wedding. You're already happy when you're getting married. Why do you need a big party? Have the party when you're getting divorced to give yourself something to live for.
Something to live for.
Exactly. So anyway, just keep that in mind. I got most of this information today from Reader's Digest. That's right, your grandparents' favorite magazine. In an article written by Melissa Laberte. So let's go back to when wedding cake originated. You guessed it, ancient Rome. Marriage ceremonies used to end where a scone-like wheat or barley cake was broken over the bride's head for luck and fertility.
Scones weigh a ton.
Also, they're small. Can you imagine just like smushing a scone, like a little hard scone on someone's head?
No, that's rude. I think they're saying it's scone-like in terms of texture, but the size of it was big enough to cause, you know, brain damage when they smashed it on her head.
And that's how all the brides in ancient Rome passed away. So anyway, yes, if you were an ancient Roman, you could drink fresh, clean water from aqueducts and little spouts on the street, but you also had to get, a scone broken over your head at your wedding. So give and take. Lots of pasta al matriciano though. The new husband and wife would eat a few crumbs together as one of the first united acts of a married couple. That's
just, like,
very
picking
sweet.
It out of her hair.
Yeah. Out of like her bloody nose. They would eat bloody crumbs. Once the newlyweds had their share, wedding guests would scoop up the leftover crumbs for good luck. People in ancient Rome get a life.
I also like scooping up crumbs off of the ground. Here's what you should do. Have one that you smash on the bride's head and then have one that you just leave for the guests to just eat.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. When you're right, you're right. And you're
right.
I
should be a wedding planner in ancient Rome.
Oh my God. You should make a fucking follow-up film to J-Lo's The Wedding Planner, but that takes place in ancient Roman times.
Were women allowed to have jobs back then?
No, but the whole thing would have to dress as a man.
Just masquerade as a man, a Roman man, and then fall in love. And then they'd be like, oh my God, gender reveal wedding.
With lots of a carbonara. Okay. So anyway. Groomsmen. I just want to take a little bit of a left turn here and just talk about groomsmen, because they have notoriously always been groomsmen. How do they work? Well, not very well. And historically, they've been creepy for centuries and centuries. Much of the history of groomsmen revolves around marriages by capture, when the bride was literally captured and abducted from her family. This practice started in biblical times and unfortunately still continues today in many parts of the world.
That is totally fucked up.
Yes, but it makes sense if you think about groomsmen in general, the stereotype. They seem like they would capture you.
So they're to make sure she doesn't run away during the wedding?
They were the bride's kidnappers, because a lot of times it was like forced marriages. So they'd be like, go get this bitch. And they'd be like, righto, right after I finish giving you a toast and telling everybody about the time when you had sex with my sister. It's believed that the best man role originated in the 16th century Germanic Goths as the groomsmen who kidnapped the bride. The best man then stood next to the bride during the ceremony to prevent other suitors or family members from taking her and to make sure she didn't run away.
Well, that's flattering, though. If you are, like, so hot that, like, other suitors are going to run up and kidnap you during your own wedding, that's flattering, I would say.
Exactly.
I bet the woman felt really, like approved of.
Of course. She probably felt validated and safe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also just, like, I'm glad this person stole me away from my other life that I didn't even realize I didn't want anymore. My stupid family. What have they ever done for me?
Right, nothing.
My real boyfriend.
They possibly could come kidnap me during my wedding. If they wanted to, there's only one guy protecting me.
But he has drank 16 Bud Lights before this. Okay. The bridesmaids all dressed like the bride to confuse evil spirits.
Oh, you were allowed to dress like the bride back then.
Exactly. They were supposed to dress like the bride and like each other. And bridesmaids would take a piece of cake home and put it under their pillow. And some bridesmaids would sleep with a piece of cake that was left in their stocking and the rest under the pillow after passing the pieces of cake through the bride's wedding ring.
I don't understand.
They would fucking slip tiny pieces of cake through the bride's wedding ring. Then they would put the cake in their stocking. They'd put some more of the cake under their pillow, all in hopes so they one day too could be fucking captured.
And they wonder why they have mice.
And then, yada, 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 the bubonic plague.
Right. They were just asking for rats to move in and eat all that fucking cake.
Exactly. Romans brought bread baking wedding tradition with them when they conquered Britain in 43 BC. And, I'm sorry, 43 CE? What's that?
I don't know.
This is 43 CE. That has to be a typo.
Well, I have no idea, but let's move on.
I just want, what? AD. Great. Thank you, man. Our religious expert.
Who, no one can hear him talk, so. You just sound like you spoke to no one.
I'm speaking of God. This information is coming straight from heaven. Okay.
CE means AD.
This just in from the wires of the Associated Press. In heaven, CE and AD are the same thing. Let's move on from here. The Brits took over the tradition one step further, and they would throw the bread at the bride to show her fertility.
They're like, so, you are fertile. Let me throw some muffins at your face.
They basically just attacked her with hard scone cake. So then in medieval times, the restaurant, they started stacking spice buns, scones, more fucking scones, these people, cookies, and all this shit into like what eventually became tiered cakes. But before they were tiered cakes, they were giant like masses of scones and cookies.
It was like seafood towers made out of cookies and scones.
Exactly, which to me sounds great because I love scones. I'm a scone guy. You know what? This gives me a great idea. If you're listening out there, you're interested in marrying me, I will say yes under the one condition. A, you steal me in the middle of the night. B, there's like cranberry scones.
As the wedding cake or just being thrown at you?
No, as the wedding cake, which people then throw at me.
I would definitely throw a fucking cranberry scone at you if that was the cake I was supposed to eat at your wedding.
What about like a rhubarb scone? Don't you like scones? You're not a scone guy?
I'm not really a scone guy. Scone, I like a savory scone. But savory scones I like, but then I'm like, well, isn't this just a biscuit? ?
That's fair. Okay. So legend has it that if the bride and groom smooched successfully without letting the whole thing topple over onto them, they would have good fortune. So I guess these things were extremely precarious. The only way they could have good fortune is if the pile of scones didn't fall on their faces.
These people love to throw food on the ground.
Yeah, they're very wasteful. Very wasteful. So then we're moving into like the 17th century, and a French chef thought that a pile of pastries was tacky looking and recommended making like a stack, a nice stack with pieces of broom handle, like holding everything together, like in tiers.
That sounds less tacky for sure.
Yeah, exactly. There's
just like broken pieces of broom handles stuck into cookies and scones.
Great idea, Scofia, you fucking dolt. So the first known official wedding confection comes from 1685 in a recipe for bride's pyre, a pastry crust filled with an assortment of, you guessed it, oysters, lamb testicles, throat, rooster comb, and pine kernels. Throat.
Rooster comb? Like the hat that a rooster wears?
That's right. A rooster's hat or a beard. It's one of the two funny things hanging off
of a rooster.
I didn't
know that those were edible.
Well, I mean, I didn't really realize that throat was edible either, to be honest. Huh. I know neck is edible, but throat?
What's the difference?
Well, neck is the muscle. The throat is just, I don't know.
I mean, if it's in there, we can probably try to
savage.
Eat it.
Savage. Yeah, that's fine. These people, these fucking Brits, I don't know. Or actually, I don't even know who these people were. They're making it. It sounds French,
whole
right?
Whole animal, you know? They really started the whole animal movement.
It's more than whole animal, Nicole. It's a ridiculous assortment of things. Oysters and pine kernels and rooster comb and throat and testicles. It's like,
but
I get it.
Eat all of those things except for pine cones.
But why do they have to be in the same pie for a wedding? I'm just saying, if you were sitting here and they're like, it was lamb's throat, lamb's testicles, lamb's brain, lamb meat, lamb fur, all that fucking shit from a lamb. I just feel like it's like rude to combine rooster comb and pine kernels together for your wedding cake. But who am I? Yeah.
Also calling it lamb's fur is very funny.
Lamb's fuzz. Lamb hair. I'm sorry. single ladies certainly had some incentive to eat their share of this disgusting fucking pie. They hid a ring somewhere in the pie, and whoever found it would be the next in line to get married, which reminds me of a story of when my father accidentally dropped a dime into a cake that he was baking at the Love and Oven when my parents had that business, and someone came in furious, and he was like, oh my God, you won the prize. It's 10 more cakes.
That's a lot of cakes.
I know. I was like, that's overkill. What about like one free cake, 10 cakes? And what's this person supposed to do with 10 cakes? But
literally, what? It'll take them a whole year to eat them all.
I know. It seemed insane, but
like
anyway.
One cake a month for life.
Exactly. That would be more reasonable. Okay. So in the 17th century, wedding cakes started replacing this heinous pie, and most homes didn't have an oven. So bakers would bake two pie crusts on the hearth and then put currants between them like a sandwich and sprinkle sugar on top of it.
Sure. Sounds
you got
fine.
A cake going. Couples would sometimes like wait until they got back home to dig into their cake in private, which I think sounds great. The bride takes a bite. She tosses the rest of it over her head like a bouquet so that her new husband would get everything that he wanted out of life. And the groom.
So they're still even when they're doing it in the house by themselves, they're still throwing cake on the floor.
Exactly. Throwing it everywhere. And then the groom takes the plate. He throws it over his head. And if it breaks, they're destined for a happy marriage, which begs the question, what kind of fucking groom throws a plate and it doesn't break? Like, what? You have to really try not to break a plate.
Well, what if it's metal?
Well, then I'm not really sure that this groom, I don't know. I feel like he wasn't being set up for success by being given a metal plate. Unless it was in his head, you know what I mean?
It was sabotaged by different kidnappers.
By big kidnapping.
Yeah.
Okay, so then sugar enters the picture and it becomes cheaper. And then like icing kind of starts to happen and blah, 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 blah. White icing symbolizes the bride's virginity. And it also is a symbol of wealth.
Oh, great. Things that are awesome.
So awesome. Being a wealthy virgin, we can all aspire, yeah?
Yeah.
So then tiered cakes make a big splash in the 18th century. A London baker fell in love with his boss's daughter, and he wanted to create a fancy-ass cake to impress her when he proposed. So he made it look like the spire at St. Bride's Church.
What is he going to do on the actual wedding day if this is the proposal cake?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's going to bake his own fucking wedding cake. This sounds like a groomzilla.
Yeah. Yeah. Very control freak.
Very controlling, sir. At the wedding, they have a 10-tiered cake, completely cake, no cardboard, no wood, just cake. And as they are cutting it, the cake collapses. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I forgot that this is a new section of my story. We are done with the history. Now we are moving on to cake disasters.
Okay.
Okay. So this didn't happen historically. This happened at someone's actual wedding. We're done with the history of cake. Take it or leave it. Now we are into disasters of cakes that I found on Reddit. This person says, at the wedding, they had a 10-tier wedding cake, completely cake, no cardboard, no wood, just cake. And as the couple is cutting it, the cake collapses under its own weight. They called 911.
What? Why?
Because it fell on the bride.
And it killed her?
I know. I'm like, how much could this fucking cake weigh that you need to call 911?
It's also like not scones being thrown at your face.
Exactly. Okay. Next disaster. Friends had a small 30-guest wedding with a reception in a private area of a restaurant. After the meal, our server came through the doors with the 3-tiered wedding cake in her arms. When she got front and center, she slipped and hit the floor like a rock, face first, into the cake.
Oh, no.
The initial laughter stopped quickly when it seemed like she might be hurt because she wasn't moving.
Oh, my God!
She got up with help, obviously sore, but crying as hard as I've ever seen anyone and hysterically apologizing over and over.
And
this
then we fired her.
Poor person. And it reminds me of when my parents were caterers. my dad made a wedding cake one time and they had a server who came who was like apparently really drunk when they got there and they fucking stepped in the cake right before the wedding and destroyed it.
Wow.
My dad had to go to the grocery store and buy like made cake, like already made cakes and try to put them together to make it look like a wedding cake.
Crazy.
I know, dude. This poor person though. Imagine slipping and falling face first in someone's wedding cake. I bet that's good luck somehow.
Probably.
Okay. This person says, we had our $800 cake in the refrigerator outside on the bottom shelf. We put the pasta salad we made for our wedding on the top shelf. All four bowls disintegrated and what? Pasta salad got all over the cake.
What are you
we
talking about?
The pasta off and just used the cake for looks.
What bowl would disintegrate?
That's exactly. What kind of fucking, did you put bleach in your pasta salad? Like, what was in this fucking pasta salad that would make a bowl disintegrate?
It must have been like those paper cardboard bowls, but like you shouldn't put those.
Why would you keep your wedding pasta salad in a cardboard bowl?
I don't know. People are mental.
I know. This is just proving that there are some really freaky deaky people out there. Okay. At our wedding, my great aunt Dolly loved our cake so much she ate three pieces, which is unlike her. Whereupon she decided to get up dance. Also unlike her. The next thing you know, she needed to be hospitalized.
Oh, I thought she was going to poop her pants.
Well, that might have happened too. Okay, now here are some famous celebrity wedding cakes. This is one of the most shocking wedding cake flavors I've ever heard of. Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds. Apparently, according to this magazine, usweekly.com, Lively and Reynolds had quite the extravagant dessert table at their wedding, including s'mores bars, blueberry cheesecake tartlets, and lemon tartlets with meringue topping. But the piece de resistance was their towering, get ready for this, vanilla and sour cream wedding cake with peach apricot preserves and Earl Grey milk chocolate buttercream.
What the hell?
I'll read it again. The piece de resistance was their towering vanilla and sour cream wedding cake with peach apricot preserves. We're kind of okay up until then. And Earl Grey milk chocolate buttercream. This is not a good combination, folks.
No.
I'm sorry. All of these things on their own sound reasonable. Together, it's too much. And that's too just much. That. Chelsea Clinton, the former first daughter's wedding, a health-conscious cake was on the menu made of kale and cabbage. No, I'm kidding. The couple got a 5-tier gluten-free dessert from a local bakery. Snooze.
Gluten-free? God damn it.
I know. Go to hell. The world's largest wedding cake weighed in at 6.8 tons, which is 15,032 pounds, and was made by
15,000 pounds.
15,000 pounds.
And how many people were at the wedding?
I'm not sure. I don't think it was it was for a bridal showcase.
Okay.
It was
great.
Made by chefs at Mohegan Sun Resort and Casino in Connecticut, USA, and displayed at the New England Bridal Showcase on the 8th of February, 2004, the year of our Lord. And that's it. That's all I have about wedding cake. But I think it's a lot.
Quite a lot. 15,000 pounds.
Can you fucking imagine if, like, you're just, like, working at some place and your dumbass chef is like, hey, so, guys, this week we're going to make a 15,000-pound cake. Everyone, you're on frosting. Like, what an ass.
I have a non-cake related wedding disaster that happened at my restaurant before I worked there, but I still think it's very also terrifying. So one of the servers was bringing a tray full of champagne that they had bought for the wedding, you know, like the first toast or whatever. And he also had like broken his ankle recently or something. And so he's carrying this tray full of glasses of champagne outside. He trips, he falls, he smashes every single one of the glasses, and they didn't have any more of that champagne. So they just had to serve sparkling wine, which is fine. But also how embarrassing.
Very embarrassing. I mean, this is not wedding related or wedding cake related, but it reminds me of, and I know I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again. at Brucey one night. I don't know, the year was probably like 2015. And I decided that I wanted to, like, I was going to show these servers what it's, how to do it. You know what I mean? I was like, not really, but like I was waiting tables and helping out. And I was like trying to like be cool and like walk around and fucking strut my stuff. And so I'm walking between the big table and the bar at Brucey. And I like, I have a plate of spaghetti meatballs. So I'm like, I'm going to put this above my head while I walk by instead of carefully carrying it. And yep. The whole thing slipped off. Blazing hot spaghetti meatballs slipped off the plate and fell onto somebody's head. And I was so embarrassed. I'm pretty good at confrontation and just dealing with things in general, especially at Brucey, was my restaurant. But I fucking hid in the kitchen and I refused to come out.
Yeah, that's the only thing that you can do, really.
A whole plate of spaghetti and meatballs. Slipped onto somebody's head. And I like ran in the kitchen and I was like, Jenny, I just dropped a whole plate of spaghetti and meatballs on someone's head. And we laughed so hard. And if you're listening right now, person, I'm sorry, but also you weren't very cool about it when it happened.
Well, I don't know how cool I would be if a whole plate of spaghetti and meatballs boiling hot landed on me. And I have to like go home and change and I probably live in Bay Ridge or something.
Oh my God. So funny.
But I one time was at, like, I don't even know what restaurant we were at. This is the 90s. A server walked by me and spilled an entire pitcher of Coca-Cola in my lap. And they gave us free Coca-Colas
Oh, my God.
They're like, oh, the drinks are on us, everyone. And I was like, okay, but I'm covered in Coca-Cola. I was wearing tights, too, so it just, like, went right through everything.
Oh, that's terrible. One time, Jenny, Megan Scalero, Kara, and myself went to dinner at Carbone when, like, Carbone kind of first opened. And we had, like, it was, like, a staff dinner. We were, like, taking ourselves out. And we had this very expensive meal, obviously, because it's at Carbone. And as we're having, like, dessert and Amaro, one of the fucking owners of Carbone and one of like the chef owners start smoking cigarettes next to us. Like we're eating, right? We're still eating. And then it was like Jeff, like one of the owners of Carbone, like his birthday. And so he's taking shots of like Jack Daniels, like ripping shots and like being super loud next to us. And then he fucking throws up and some of it goes on to Megan Scalero. And as an I'm sorry to us, these fucking pieces of shit decide to just send us some limoncello on the house. Like you threw up on your fucking customers on like $1,000 meal. I just the audacity of like what men like that think they can do. I'm sorry. Like if something even like slightly would go wrong at Brucey or like, whatever, we would comp people's whole meal. You're going to vomit on somebody? Send them limoncello? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but it's probably house-made, you know?
That's true. It was very delicious. And it really went well with, like, the Amaro that we were already fucking drinking. Ridiculous.
Why didn't he give you shots of Jack Daniels, America's favorite thing to drink, take a shot of?
I know. They're like, here, as a gift from the kitchen, here's shot glasses of this fucking asshole's puke. In a commemorative Carbone shot glass. But that spicy rigatoni, I mean, am I right? Chef's kiss.
I don't know. Just kidding.
It's fine. It's like, it's whatever. Okay. Well, what a great episode. I guess we can't say top three. We're going to say our top three favorite wedding cakes. White, chocolate, vanilla, carrot, I guess.
Donuts, cupcakes. White.
Amazing. Well, folks, thank you so much for turning out to Fabio's favorite podcast, Life's a Banquet, the podcast with an edge.
You pay for the whole seat, but you only need the edge.
Oh, love it. Okay, well, I love you. So fun to talk to you. You're so silly.
You are.
You are. Okay, guys, hasta la pasta.
Bye-bye.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritage radio network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.